The following program is brought to you by Winthrop University Hospital. It's the weekend. Be good to yourself. It's Katz's Corner with Dr. Aaron Katz, where you can get simple, straightforward answers to your questions about health, from diet and supplements to lifestyle changes. To reach Dr. Katz, call 800-848-WABC. Now, live on 77 WABC, the chairman of urology at Winthrop University Hospital in New York, here is Dr. Aaron Katz.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome again to Katz's Corner here on WABC Radio in New York. I'm your host, Dr. Aaron Katz, and we're live. If you want to give us a call at 1-800-848-WABC, that's 1-800-848-9222. Get your calls in early. Phone lines are open, and we are ready to take your calls. We have a wonderful guest today on the show. He's been here before, a colleague of mine at Winthrop University Hospital, Dr. Anthony Corcoran, who is a fantastic robotic surgeon. He has trained at the Fox Chase Cancer Center. He was at Stony Brook for a while, and now we are very grateful to have him at Winthrop, and he's doing some incredible work on patients with both men and women with bladder cancer and men with prostate cancer and men and women with kidney cancer, and has really changed the department quite a bit in minimally invasive surgery and protocols to improve, well, not only the length of stay, and that's been a major, in the past it was a problem for many of the surgeries that we had done, but now with robotic surgery, patients are getting out of the hospital, and even with the more complicated surgeries that he's doing for bladder cancer, he has started a program called ERAS, Early Recovery After Surgery. So we'll get into all of that, and we'll take your phone calls at 1-800-848-WABC. Good morning, Dr. Corcoran. How are you?
Very good. Thank you for having me. Good morning, Dr. Katz.
Good morning. I know that you wanted to start the show this morning and talk about a police officer, someone that you knew who was unfortunately, tragically killed in the line of duty this morning.
Yes. I wanted to just briefly send a tribute out to Paul Tizzolo, Sergeant Paul Tizzolo, who, as many are aware, was tragically killed protecting the public in the Bronx. I knew Paul through one of my very good friends who worked with him at the 2-6 in Manhattan. And I knew Paul to be a dedicated man. He was dedicated to his family. He had a wife, Lisa, and two young boys, Austin and Joseph. He was dedicated to his friends and his coworkers at the 4-3 in the Bronx, and certainly to the public. I think this was evident on his last, during his last actions where he was guarding the public safety and then tragically killed, but his final actions, in fact, saved the life of his partner. And I knew him to be this way in social settings as well, always checking in on others to make sure they were comfortable and having a good time. And we actually nicknamed him Dancing Paul. He was often the life of the party. I think we owe so much to our men and women who protect our safety, and we certainly mourn with his family and friends who loved him dearly. In a time where role models tend to be scarce, I think Paul exemplified what it means to be a true hero. And I just want to say that there's a GoFundMe account that people can go on to. If you go to GoFundMe.com, type his name in, Paul Tizzolo, that will help focus on his kids who are young, 2 and 4 years old, and helping them to have a good education.
Thank you so much, Anthony, for stating that. And, you know, I, you know, so many of these police officers just put their lives every day right out there, and we owe them so much. And so thank you so much for this tragic loss, and our hearts and thoughts go out to his family.
No, thank you for that.
Sure. We do have a lot of people on the phones already, but I know that we wanted to just start out this morning and get your thoughts about what we're doing differently now. Over the last few years, we have talked a lot about the use of the MRI and the fusion biopsies. For patients that have elevated PSAs, it's really kind of changed the landscape quite a bit And maybe you can just tell us a little bit about that in terms of how, in your practice, this whole, you know, it's changing quite a bit, isn't it? And
yes.
You know, and how do we, and how do you, in your practice, you know, if someone comes in with an elevated PSA, I mean, are you getting MRIs on everyone? And if the MRIs, now we have the scoring system, as you know, the PI-RADS scoring system. So tell us a little bit about how you stratify these patients and, you know, analyze them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't get an MRI in everybody coming in. I mean, I think if someone comes in with an elevated PSA and they're, you know, very young, say in their early 50s, and the free PSA is very low, which is, as you know, a risk factor for harboring malignancy as the driving force behind the PSA, or they have a family history, or they're African American, you know, we may decide to proceed right to traditional biopsy, which I think is the appropriate thing to do in those situations. But, you know, some men maybe who don't want a biopsy right off the bat, or who've had prior negative biopsies, or, you know, there's an equivocal finding when we look at the PCA3 score or the ultrasound of the prostate or their free PSA or their PSAs on the border, we may get an MRI in those men. And, you know, not uncommonly, what we're looking for is what's called a lesion. We'll find a lesion. And the good thing about MRI is that it's increasingly being used to find clinically significant cancers. These are the cancers that we're most interested in finding and subsequently treating. You know, there's, as you know, as we talk about, there's some overdiagnosis and overtreatment of prostate cancer in men who have very slow-growing cancers, and MRI is actually good at weeding these out and avoiding them. And that's where the PI-RADS system comes in. It's a scale from 1 to 5. 5 is the lesion with the highest likelihood of harboring a significant cancer, you know, Gleason 7s or higher. 1 is the lowest likelihood, and 3 is in the middle. So if we see a 3, but certainly a 4 and a 5, that's going to give us a target to go after and try to biopsy that area and see if it is, in fact, a significant cancer. And we can do that with MRI fusion biopsies. You know, MRI-guided biopsy, actually having an MRI working while you do the biopsy, is possible, but it's very time-consuming, costly, impractical. It's hard to, if you think about what an MRI is, actually get a biopsy done inside of this tube. But we can take the images and fuse them with an ultrasound, and almost like a fighter pilot can have a target on his screen to go after, that's what we have, and we can stick a needle right into those areas and see what they are. And, you know, the results are very good. We're finding that, you know, essentially we can increase the detection of clinically significant cancers compared to, you know, traditional biopsy with a 20% increase. And we can avoid these low-risk disease tumors that we may not necessarily treat. And we can hopefully avoid overtreatment with that. And with men with a previously negative biopsy where the traditional biopsy hasn't worked, we can find clinically significant cancers about 80% of the time. And even men who are on active surveillance, we can get MRIs in them, which we're often doing through, you know, the program we have at Winthrop, Active Holistic Surveillance, that you helped create. And we get these MRIs, we see a lesion, they're on surveillance, we can target those and, again, improve our risk stratification of men on surveillance.
How do you deal with the patients that don't want the MRI? I mean, I see patients that are just anxious. They don't want to get into the tube. You know.
That's a great question. You know, unfortunately, we have the ability to give them some medication to help relax them. You know, anti-anxiety medications, a dose of Valium. Of course, you need someone to drive you then that day, but that I think that helps relax a lot of patients. We do have the ability to give them sedation during an MRI. We can do that, you know, that's not just Valium. That's obviously a little bit more. Again, you need someone to drive you, but that can help out as well.
Okay, yeah, because I see these patients, you know, I don't want to get in that tube, you know. And how long? It doesn't take all that long, though, to get an MRI. And we're talking about an MRI, not a CAT scan. That can be also confusing for a lot of patients. And where to get the MRI. And, I want to get an open MRI. You know, it's not good, right? The open MRIs can't tell you anything about the prostate for some reason. We haven't figured out that technology yet, that platform. So it's got to be the...
The open MRI, unfortunately, is a lower-powered magnet. You need a 3-Tesla magnet.
Yeah.
And the open MRIs, we don't have that capability yet.
You're right. You need the 3T if you're listening out there and you're saying, well, you know, my PSA, my doctor told me my PSA is elevated. You need a 3T. And you also need somebody on the other end that's reading it. You know, right, Dr. Corcoran? I mean, it's not just your everyday radiologist. It's someone like the people that we have, the dedicated team that we have at Winthrop. They're really excellent that can... you know, spot these areas of concern and then communicate to the doctor, the urologist, about it, their concern, their level of concern, as you said, the level, the PI-RADS level from 1 to 5. Let's take some phone calls at 1-800-848-WABC. I see that Ralph has been waiting. Good morning, Ralph, from Plainview. How are you?
Okay. My question is, I hear a lot about CyberKnife out of Winthrop and the efficacy of CyberKnife.
Okay.
Being as high as 90%. My question is, why would anybody go to surgery first when you have a non-invasive procedure like the CyberKnife?
Very good question, Ralph. And, an interesting article that was just published did address this question. Is surgery or as good as radiation? Is radiation as good as surgery? And I'll give you my thoughts. And, you know, we do have cure rates of very high, of over 90%. You're right, in majority of patients that we treat. But, Dr. Corcoran, what do you think? I mean, is there a concern maybe about the younger patients that maybe are diagnosed with and more aggressive cancer and having CyberKnife versus surgery? And I know... You sent a lot of patients for CyberKnife, especially for the intermediate patients, maybe the older patients. But what about some of the other younger patients getting CyberKnife as a primary upfront treatment versus robotic surgery?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it comes down to two main areas. I think there's the medical reasons that, you know, one may consider, you know, surgery versus radiation. And then there's sort of the personal reasons. You know, I do find that there's a subset of patients that they hear they have a cancer, they kind of either want it out of their body or they don't want an operation. So I do find a lot of men kind of fall into those two categories. And you know, in prostate cancer, and Dr. Haas says this at his talk, which was fantastic this weekend in Manhattan for CyberKnife, that, you know, everything works. In a lot of patients, everything really does work. So there is that personal preference that a lot of patients display. And I think that's a great way to select the best treatment option for each patient. But then, you know, there's also medical reasons where we might say, you know, if you're young, if you have an aggressive tumor, with upfront surgery, there are some benefits. We can do an extensive staging workup where we know if the, you know, cancer was outside the prostate, if it was in the lymph nodes, if it was invading the seminal vesicles, if it's a high-grade tumor, and if these adverse pathologic features are present on pathology, we then have the ability to do radiation afterwards, you know, a so-called multimodal approach, much in the way that we treat a breast cancer. You know, if someone comes in with a breast cancer, they have surgery to remove the lump, they have a lymph node dissection, they have radiation, they may be on hormone therapy afterwards. That similar paradigm in prostate cancer, we call multimodal therapy, and we're applying that to men with high-risk disease, especially if they're younger, because, you know, it offers some advantages. We have multiple ways to treat the cancer, and for these aggressive cancers, you know, we can have excellent results using that algorithm.
Yeah, so let's, Ralph, are you still on the line with us?
Yeah, but what is the data with CyberKnife on aggressive high Gleason score cancers?
Well, we don't have a lot of data on those patients, Ralph, because the majority of the patients, if you look at the ones that we've been treating at Winthrop, are either the low or the intermediate risk, but we have some of those patients, and, you know, many of those patients, as Dr. Corcoran just mentioned, do require a combined approach with hormones for, you know, sometimes 9 months, sometimes a year, and then the CyberKnife mixed in between there. So we are just we're collecting that data, and it appears to be promising. It certainly appears, if you're going to consider radiation, to be the most convenient form. It's 5 days. And I think it's probably the most effective in terms of its ability to focus and target radiation to the area. But, you know, as Dr. Corcoran mentioned, for the high risk, the advantages of surgery are that you would have good staging, you would have good prognostic features right there and then, and the lymph nodes would be removed. Uh-huh. So, you know, are you thinking about this for yourself, Ralph?
No, for somebody else. I was telling him about CyberKnife.
Mm-hmm.
Then surgery has so many side effects, doesn't it, with sexual...
Well, let's talk about that, Ralph. That's a good question. So, Dr. Corcoran, you do a lot of the robotics at Winthrop. I think you have six or something like that on the schedule today, or this week, I mean, not today, this week. What is the conversation that you have about, the sexual and the urinary side effects? Because in the past, with the open surgery, maybe, and maybe there were more side effects, but now with robotics and your extensive experience, so how are we doing with that?
Patients do really well. Treatment of prostate cancer, pretty much anything you do has the risk of having some side effects. There's nothing that is totally without risk. So, surgery obviously also has the risk of, leakage of urine after surgery and sexual side effects. But really with robotic surgery, we've been able to kind of change the way that this occurs and change what we can save and how men recover. So first, the goal of any treatment really is cancer control, and surgery offers an excellent way to, cure cancer. From a next objective standpoint, preservation of urinary continence, I make sure to save the sphincters, the external sphincter, the internal sphincter, the bladder neck. I do a bladder neck sparing procedure, with a lot of surgeons I know don't perform. But this really helps men recover their continence much quicker. And in the long run, the overwhelming majority of our men are dry, meaning they're wearing either no pads or one pad just for protection.
Right. And
so I've noticed a huge difference between, the traditional open surgery and robotic surgery in the speed and the end point in which they recover their urinary side effects. And then, sexual side effects, it depends on what you come in with. If your erections are starting out not the greatest, which obviously we're taking care of an older population of men, there is that proportion of men who already have pre-existing problems with erections. They're not going to get any better after prostate cancer treatment. And certainly that's also the case with surgery, but we can spare the nerves. If you're coming in with a good erection and you're young, you're healthy, you're not a smoker, you're diabetic, these are the men most likely to recover their erections, and we save the nerves, and they, tend to recover their erections with a very high rate of recovery.
But Dr. Katz, you don't have those side effects with CyberKnife, do you?
Well, with CyberKnife, you typically are not going to have urinary incontinence. You're not going to leak urine at all. You can have some sexual side effects because, the nerves can get, their nerves run very close to the prostate.
Right.
So it's possible, as Dr. Corcoran mentioned, with any modality, it's possible, especially as men do get older. I think it's, it's interesting, because I see a lot of men with aggressive disease that clearly need treatment, and they're concerned about their erections. And I said, well, if you don't have this treatment and this spreads to your lymph nodes or to your bone, none of these other modalities are not going to be available to you. And then you're just going to need to be on hormones, which you're guaranteed almost 100% to have problems with not only your erections, but your libido. And if there are problems with erections, and they can happen, I think, within 3 months, maybe 6 months after surgery, there are ways to get some early, recovery, and that would be typically with either, we have a penile rehabilitation program, which does combine sometimes the use of a vacuum device or the use of a medication like Cialis or Viagra to help you. And then if not, there are injection programs, and then if not, we have surgeons at Winthrop that can place an implant, and that certainly it's almost guaranteed to fix the problem. I think, though, that the main thing is to really understand the biology, and I think genomics helps us. I think, as Dr. Corcoran has mentioned, his fusion biopsies help us and MRIs help us. And then, Ralph, you know, your friend might want to come to Winthrop just for a consultation to see one of us. We have a, you know, you can see all of us. You know, that's the nice thing about us is that we talk about patients back and forth pretty much all day long, every day. And I think for the most part, we try to be unbiased. And certainly surgeons want to, you know, they have a surgical, you know, training, and radiation oncologists have their training in their field. But I think we're very fair and we're very balanced at our institution. And we try to give the best care to all of our patients. But and then, you know, as Dr. Corcoran mentioned, there are some patients that say, look, I have this cancer in my body and I want it out. And I'm 52 years old and I've got a Gleason 8 cancer and I don't want to live with it. And, you know, having it out by radical surgery and with robotics, within 6 weeks, your PSA will be zero. It should be zero.
Right.
And so that gives a great comfort to many patients knowing that.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it, Dr.
Okay, Ralph. Well, thank you. And I hope that was very helpful to you. Let's go to Gary in the Bronx. Good morning, Gary. You're on the line with Dr. Anthony Corcoran this morning at 1-800-848-WABC. The lines are open. Good morning, Gary. You have a question.
Sure, I do. But first, gentlemen, doctor, I'm glad you mentioned Sergeant Paul Taluzzo's name this morning. And that Friday afternoon, Sergeant Taluzzo, he represented civil society, and he paid an awful price for it. And just to let his family know, there's a lot of people out here willing to help and who will never abandon him and his family, for sure. And quickly...
Thank you, Gary. Thank you for those comments. Thank you.
Definitely. I'm glad you mentioned it. Believe me, a lot of people out here appreciate that. And we hope that Winthrop would break open the saddlebags and give Dr. Katz an hour, because the show is very informative, and you got the personality, too, to deliver a good radio show.
Thank you.
A couple of quick points here.
Yes, sir.
The thing with the PSA now, I've heard the federal government guidelines came out, said you should be 50 when you go for it. Then I also heard those same guidelines used for breast cancer for 50. But we know individuals can get these cancers at younger ages. So are we being a little court, not cautious, but we're moving the age limit of too high up there. And mm-hmm. Another question quickly, because you guys can deal with this. From what I read up, testosterone is what feeds the prostate cancer when it's present.
Yes.
Do we look at it as the body is attacking the body?
That's a good question. I mean, how did God design us like this? You know, we need testosterone, obviously, for our libido and our sex drive and our muscle strength and our energy as men. But you're absolutely right. One of the main treatments for advanced prostate cancer is to wipe out testosterone and drop testosterone very quickly, which, of course, can have dramatic side effects on men. Great questions, Gary. Thank you very much for your questions and, of course, your comments. Dr. Corcoran, what about the age of PSA? You know, do you think that we should really start maybe earlier on? Maybe men should get tested even in their 20s or 30s. You know, we don't see prostate cancer typically in 20s or 30s, but maybe that can be predictive of who would develop prostate cancer, especially maybe those men that do have a higher risk, maybe African-American men or men with a family history. What are your thoughts?
I certainly have treated men in their late 30s with prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm.
It's extremely rare, but they had a strong family history. Certainly in the higher risk groups, African-American family history, you know, there's you should be checking your PSA certainly in your early 50s, but even earlier. I typically recommend in my practice getting a baseline PSA around, you know, in the mid-40s to late 40s.
Mm-hmm.
If the PSA is less than one, we know from very good data that these are the men least likely to develop prostate cancer, and we can watch them, but we're a little bit less stringent where we don't necessarily have to be as rigorous with everything. If their PSA is greater than one, if they're in the highest percentages of prostate cancer per their age, then these are the men most likely to die of prostate cancer in their lifetime, and we're going to make sure that we follow them very closely. So PSA in the mid-40s can be predictive.
So again, so if you're getting if you're in your mid-40s and you get a PSA and the doctor calls you and you're waiting for the result, what should the level be in your mid-40s, let's say 48 years old?
Yeah, we like it to be certainly less than one.
Okay.
You know, if it's less than one, you're definitely in a group of men that's less likely to develop prostate cancer over their lifetime. Certainly, that doesn't mean you won't develop it, but it just means that you're less likely. But if your PSA is over one, you know, we're going to probably start screening you right then and there yearly.
Yeah, and going back to Gary's question, which was terrific, about are we missing the boat on many men? Do you get a pushback from any of the insurance carriers, or can you do a PSA and without the patient worrying about the cost of this?
I have not had any pushback.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's different in your practice.
Yeah, no, I haven't either. I'm just wondering if you did, because it's not that it's not that much money, I guess, but of course, these things do add up, and sometimes hospitals and laboratories can charge crazy amount of money for these tests these days. And it'd be nice to know that if you're going to, a doctor's going to order the test, you're not going to be winding up with some huge bill there. So that's really not an issue, right?
I have not encountered any pushback from insurance with getting PSAs, which is, certainly a very good thing for men's health.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, if you're out there, by the way, and listening, and some of the patients say, well, I missed the show on Sunday. I heard it was so great. Well, it's easy. You can go on to WinthropUrology.com. All of the podcasts are there. Now you can check us out on Facebook. Thanks to Maureen Reagan, who's been helping and updating the Facebook page. I don't know, have you seen the Facebook page recently, Dr. Corcoran? It's looking pretty good.
I did. I saw it, and it's excellent. You got a lot of followers, and it's a great way to get the message about the show out there, for sure.
Yeah. A lot of the urologists are doing social media these days. I know you're doing Twitter as well. Is that right?
Yes. I'm at Uro-Oncologist, and I'm on Twitter. I have about 1,500 followers. And,
wow.
It really does get your message out there, number one. Number two, it's a great place to converse with urologists from all over the world. We have international journal clubs on Twitter. It's really something else.
Wonderful. Well, you could spend the whole day doing that, I'm sure. One of the other programs you had started was this enhanced recovery after surgery, this ERAS program, modeled after MD Anderson's center program out in Texas. Tell us in the last few moments a little bit about that and what this program is all about at Winthrop.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about a game changer, this is it. I mean, traditionally when we would do bladder cancer removal or cystectomy, patients would be in the hospital, for sure 1 week and many 2 weeks. And because the rate limiting step was the bowels waking up, it takes time for the bowels to start functioning again so you can start eating and you can start, getting your nutrition back to be discharged. So that was the major problem. And we were using bowel preps like you would have before a colonoscopy, a tube down your nose. We weren't feeding you until you passed gas, and all these different measures that were the sort of dogma. And now we have this totally different way of doing everything where we remove the bowel prep, remove the tube, feed people right up until the night before surgery, feed them when they wake up from surgery, give them gum to chew, get them walking around, better pain control. We give them a medicine that helps the bowels wake up quicker. All these little measures have incrementally now made it, though, that you're passing gas within a couple days and you're tolerating your diet. I mean, I just did a neobladder, which is taking someone's bladder out, creating a new bladder, and they were literally operated on a Monday and home on a Friday.
Wow.
And now
they have a new bladder.
Yeah, and they have a new bladder.
And they're cured of bladder cancer, and they have a brand new bladder with no cancer in it.
Exactly.
Yeah, and these are for patients both, and this is for men and women, correct? You can do this operation?
Yep, men.
Well, congratulations on that. I mean, we really need to do that. And, of course, we're all looking at quality measures these days, hospitals across the board, and length of stay and overall complications. And this is what we need to do. I mean, thankfully, we have someone like yourself that can do these robotic surgeries on the bladder as well as the prostate and the kidney. And the bladder was the one that would, really keep the patients in the hospital, because you had to make a whole new bladder out of intestine. And there was some problems. But now, I mean, 5 days, that's like unheard of. It's dramatic.
Yeah. And the other thing about these kinds of patients after their surgeries, they would, sometimes come back to the hospital, because even though their bowels were working when they were in the hospital, the bowels would slow down once they left the hospital, and they would need to be readmitted and put on, nutrition by vein. So not only does it get you out of the hospital faster, it prevents and reduces the rates that you're coming back with these problems. So
that's the ERAS program. That's it. Okay. Enhanced recovery after surgery at Winthrop. Dr. Corcoran, we have time. I guess we have one more minute for Jim, who is on the line in Manhattan. Good morning, Jim. How are you doing? Oh,
great.
Boy.
Thanks, doctor.
I'm sorry, that's the music, Jim. I guess you got to call in earlier. Maybe we'll get you in next week. If you can call us back next week, next Sunday, every Sunday here on Katz's Corner. WinthropUrology.com is our website. Check us out on Facebook. Thank you so much, Dr. Corcoran. You are an outstanding guest as always. We will continue to have you back here on Katz's Corner to educate all of our listeners. Have a wonderful day. Stay warm. A little chilly out there. See you next week. This is Dr. Aaron Katz.